This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 61.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
It is financial technology. That's what it is. However, when people talk about fintech, usually what they mean is more like innovation in financial services. So, you know, how technology is changing financial services. And for me, I take even a broader view, which is innovation. So it doesn't, a shortcut is innovation in financial services.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today's guest is Tristan Pelu, and he is the founder and chief pencil officer of Fintech Review, an online media on the fintech industry. He writes about a range of topics around business, finance, economics, and he interviews business leaders in those fields. When he's not managing Fintech Review, he's a management consultant working with different companies of all sizes across Europe and the US to help them shape their strategies. Before becoming an entrepreneur, he worked in the financial services at Virgin Money in London for more than 5 years. So Tristan, really excited to have you on. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
All right, right on. So the first thing I want to do is I gave a brief intro about you, you know, talking a little bit about your background. But if you could share a little bit more about yourself, share your story. Like how'd you get started? What made you decide to go and start this thing called the Fintech Review?
Yeah, sure. So I studied business. I went to business school, studied management and finance and economics. And after that, most of my mates from the major in finance were all going into investment banking, either in London or in Paris. So I did like everybody else. I moved to London to be an intern in M&A, like doing cross-border transactions, which was quite good fun, like for 6 months. And I thought I would go work in investment banking, but I stumbled across this job ad to join the corporate development team. Which is usually like in a corporate team that does corporate finance and corporate strategy of an Australian bank called National Australia Bank. And they wanted to carve out their UK business and do an IPO. So I thought, oh, looks, that's super interesting. So I joined this bank. Worked on that for 6 months, became an independent bank. And then over the years, I stayed in this team, kind of specialized much more in corporate strategy and innovation projects and looking a lot at fintech, what's going on, how is it impacting our strategy? You know, what do we need to take into account with like different market movements? So that's what I did. And then my last role there, I was focusing on developing strategic partnerships with fintech startups and big technology companies. But last year, I think it was time for me to leave cloudy London, and I moved to Barcelona. And I decided it was time for me to try a bit the entrepreneur life. So I had started Fintech Review as a personal blog, and I decided to scale it a bit more. Started talking to people in the industry, doing interviews, like guest posts, and kind of like broadening a bit the scope of just me rambling about fintech. So that's me in a nutshell. And as you can hear, I'm a Frenchman as well. Tiny, slight accent.
Yeah, just a smidge. All right, awesome. So, you know, so you were working, you started off in the banking industry and you got into corporate right? Working on corporate strategy. You were really interested in fintech. And it led you to start this blog, right? So you started off as a blog, which is really funny because when I started Average Joe Finances, I started the same way. I started as a blog to basically share like my own story of getting out of debt and starting to invest and you know, getting myself like where I want to be financially, and then eventually turned it into a podcast and what it is today. So it's funny, a lot of these you know, groups and smaller startups and everything start off as like a blog where it's just somebody sharing like their crazy ideas, right? So it's really cool, like with what you've built, right? And you started off, like you said, as a blog, and you had guest posts and did interviews, you know, to where you are today. And, you know, the way you made it sound is like, you know, it's, you're not like being nerdy about it, but it's something you kind of geek out about, right? Like you really, this is something that you're passionate about, and you could talk about probably, we could probably talk about this for hours or days or whatever, right? So, I want to know, you know, how long have you been doing this? When did you actually start the blog, and when did you transition to where it is today?
Yeah, so I basically, the story behind the blog is that when I was working at Virgin Money, I started to become Mr. Fintech. So people would ask me, you know, what's going on? So I started writing little like snippets to my team. Okay, guys, you know, this is what has happened this week. You know, this is why I think it's important. And it went from being to my team to being to, you know, the executive team, like you broadening a big scope. And then it started being broader and, you know, writing for the intranet articles about what's going on. So at that point, kind of thought, I mean, it's cool. It's a good audience. It's obviously, I don't know, at that point, it was probably 8,000 people in the company. So it's a good audience. But I was like, you know what? It still restricts a bit to that. It could be out there for more people to share, like, so I can share a bit what I think is going on. So I started the blog in January last year, but just really, I was writing stuff here and there. And it's really when I left Virgin Money in October that I thought, okay, now I have a bit more freedom about, you know, writing what I'm saying about, because there's also like the fact that I was working for banks, so you know, there were kind of topics that I wasn't feeling comfortable, you know, bashing banks or saying, you know, they're doomed or whatever. And after that, I was like, you know, I can write about anything. And then at the end of December, I started doing interviews, like broadening the scope a bit, just by starting to interact with people doing same thing, interacting with companies reaching out and saying, oh, you know, do you do interviews? And at first I was like, no, I don't think so, but that's interesting. Let's do it. So that's how basically it happened. And then I realized it was great to talk to people about their views of different topics, about their background, why they started their companies, you know, and what were their aspirations, their motivations. So I found it really interesting. That's why I continued in that direction, and I really like it.
All right, right on. So you said when you first started out, before you started the blog, you said you were writing on your company's intranet page and you were just reaching out to the employees there. You said it was about an 8,000 member base.
Yeah.
For my listeners that are listening right now, if you don't know what an intranet is, it's kind of like an internal network for a company. So he wasn't like posting it out on the internet yet. It was strictly within the bounds of the network that they had there. So by starting the blog, you know, so you started that in January of 2020, right?
Yeah.
So by starting the blog, now you're getting that this information out to a broader base, and you can talk a little more freely, right? You couldn't really talk as freely writing on the company's intranet page, especially when it came to what you wanted to talk about with fintech and banks and everything else with what you know what you felt was going on in the future. And then being able to put yourself out there, you know, you got to the point where folks started reaching out to you and wanted to do interviews. So what was that like when that first company contacted you and they said, hey, do you do interviews? And you said, no, but this is interesting. Let's start. So what was going through your mind when they said, we want to do an interview? Like, let's chat.
Yeah. I mean, it was quite funny because this is when I started my blog, it was really a personal blog where my idea was just to blab about, oh, this has happened. I think this is important kind of thing. And so, yeah. And then when people started reaching out, I realized it was a bit bigger and it wasn't just about me. I guess at first I was a bit surprised, and then I realized actually what I'm doing is not just a personal blog here. It becomes a little media. And yeah, I thought this is quite in line with what I'm trying to do. So why not having different point of views? And that's also because that's a strong belief that I have, is that I like to confront ideas with people. So I really enjoy people that have a different point of view. Is that, you know, if you tell me something is great and I don't agree, I'm like, okay, you know, let's rumble here. Like, you know, let's chat about it. Tell me why you think it's great. I'll tell you why I think it's not. Okay. So I thought by doing interviews, it's also a good way for me to like get different point of views. I mean, so far we haven't like fought over ideas, but I really like it. It's in line with my state of mind.
Okay, right on. So in line with your state of mind. So, all right. So for my listeners out there that are wondering, since we keep saying fintech, 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 what is fintech? Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, at the very basic level, it's just like a combination of finance and technology. So it is financial technology. That's what it is. However, when people talk about fintech, usually what they mean is more like innovation in financial services. So how technology is changing financial services. And for me, I take even a broader view, which is innovation. So it doesn't only mean like technology. It can be like innovation in terms of business model, in terms of strategy, products. So this is the view I'm taking on fintech. But yeah, so I mean, a shortcut is innovation in financial services. That's a good way to look at it. But obviously, you know, an ATM, you can argue an ATM is financial technology, right? So sure. there are different views. But usually people talk about the past 10 to 20 years, a lot of innovation, a lot of new companies. So the fintechs coming to the market and disrupting really the industry.
Yeah, you know, and ATMs can, depending on which ones you go to, can be very dated technology, because there's some that I go to that you go in there and you start plugging in your, you put your card in, you plug in your PIN, and then you hear it do a dial-up, and it's like on dial-up internet. And I'm like, are you serious? I haven't heard these sounds since I logged into AOL back in the 90s. What's going on here? So, yeah, it's crazy. They've been around for a while, but things are starting to change. And with that, with a lot of, electronic banking and everything else that's going on. I know you like to talk a lot about blockchain, right? And things like that. So, I'm not the smartest when it comes to that. And that's why I'm kind of excited to talk to you. Maybe you could educate me and my audience a little bit about that, but what are some of the things that, in fintech today that excites you that you see that's going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, besides the obvious, the elephant in the room, as you say, crypto and Bitcoin. I think, I mean, there are many more things that are changing the industry and changing like really the business world. That for me more exciting. I see payments, for instance, where you had lots of innovation going on in payments. I mean, I know like in the US, you have a different like ways of doing payments. So in Europe, where we had chips for a while, and now we're all moving to contactless payments. So we're different stage, if you look at Asia, it's also, again, different, lots of mobile payments. There are so many things happening in payments, like going from point of sale payments. So when you go to a restaurant, you pay, to like online payments. Like the way you do checkout now and the way you were doing checkout before, it's like it's more and more seamless. And that's a broader trend that we call like embedded finance, embedded banking. So which just means that finance and banking is more and more embedded into the customer journey. So these are quite exciting. And then, yeah, obviously, I mean, a lot of things happening with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, which are interesting and I've been following for quite a while. So I do keep an eye on it. It's not, you know, it's not keeping me up at night, but I do find it interesting as a trend.
Okay, so what is it that you find interesting about cryptocurrencies, and Bitcoin? Well, you know, which it is a crypto as well, but what is it that gets you excited about cryptocurrencies? Because I haven't got on the train yet to where I'm super excited about it. Like, I see where it's making an impact and I see that it's here to stay. I mean, that's obvious, it's here to stay. But when I see like all the different like alternative coins and the different cryptos that are coming out, that it seems like people are just making stuff up as they go. And again, I'm not smart enough on this stuff to know like what's good, what's not good. So when people ask me about crypto, I'm like, hey, you got to talk to somebody that actually knows about that stuff, because I don't have a clue. Now, I've been following Bitcoin for a long time. I remember back when I used to, you know, I used to game and stuff back in the day, you know, and I'm going to date myself here, playing in StarCraft tournaments. And, I remember back then it was like first place, you get $100. Second place is $50. Third place is $25. Fourth and fifth place, you got 20 Bitcoin. And, you didn't want to be the guy who was in fourth or fifth place getting 20 Bitcoin, because they were giving away Bitcoin. Websites would give it away if you registered on their site. So nobody wanted that. And man, if I can go back in time, I'd be like, man, I want to come in fourth place. Forget, you know, first, second, and third. I was like, I want to come in fourth to get the 20 Bitcoin. So it's, what changed? What made Bitcoin jump and take off the way it did? It's mind boggling to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I said, I've been following a lot as well. I remember back in 2011, I was in business school. It was this, you were starting to hear about this Bitcoin stuff. So looked at it, was worth like $4 or $5. I was like, yeah, no, it's worth zero. Obviously, you know, a bit of a mistake on land. But because the thing is, I mean, my background is finance and I've studied economics, and I even studied like econometrics in the Netherlands, which are statistics applied to economics and stuff. So I do like economics a lot. The way to look at Bitcoin is that it's a bit the same as, the comparison is drawn a lot to gold, which is that value of Bitcoin is just the value that everybody agrees it has. So we're all agreed as it's worth $5, it's worth $5, it's worth 50.
It's what we do with our currencies right now. Like, you know, same thing with, over where you're at with the euro and what we do with the US dollar. It's you know, the faith of the people that, you know, the dollar is worth a dollar, that a euro is worth a euro, right? So I kind of look at it like that, but I just don't see where it's like it's tied to anything besides the fact that they can only make a limited amount. Like, I know that it's going to cap and then they can't make any more. So I get that there'll be scarcity, right? But what is it tied to that actually holds value?
Yeah, and it's, as you say, just like we all agree it has some value. So it has some value. But apart from that, that's the only thing. Obviously, the price is impacted by several factors. Like the mining cost, for instance, is impacting the price. There's a lot of wash trading happening as well, which is, wash trading is when on an exchange you have like the same coin that is going back and forth between several wallets, which is, you know, it's not a great practice. It's just to inflate the price of it. So I think, I mean, that's the thing is there's no fundamental way to look at it. And that's why back in 2011, I looked at it and I was like, I'm studying finance here. This doesn't make sense. And the thing is, a lot of institutional investors have taken a view, which is same as gold, is that okay, fine, we'll diversify and invest a bit in Bitcoin because it makes sense as part of our portfolio strategy. And for me, as long as you consider crypto like this, which is a diversification tool, and we're not going all in 100%, that you say 5% of my portfolio will be in Bitcoin, I think this is very sensible, and it's an approach that I can understand. If you tell me cryptos are the future, 100% crypto, whatever, then I'm like, no, this is BS.
Yeah, then the flag's gonna go up, and you're gonna ask some questions. So no, I like that. That's definitely a more reasonable answer than I expected, right? Because like looking at your background and everything, I was kind of like, I thought you were gonna go with the, oh man, I'm all in crypto all the way, 100%. So no, that's very reasonable. Awesome, because it's all about. When you're looking at your portfolio and when you're trying to build for retirement, you're trying to build wealth, right? It's a the key thing is diversification, right? So if you have a little bit here, a little bit there, and you're dabbling in crypto, it's probably not a bad thing because we all seen what Bitcoin's done from 2011 to where it is today. I remember when it hit $60 when I was looking at it, I thought it was ridiculous. I was like, there's no way, how is this $60? And then it was $1,000, and then it was $9,000, and I'm like, what is going on? And so this back in I think it was 2015, 2016 is actually when I bought some Bitcoin when it was like $7,000 or $9,000. I remember I sold it all when it got up to it went up to 19 and then dropped back down. I think I sold it at 12, and this was in 2017 or 18. It was before I came to Hawaii. So 2017, I think, somewhere around there. And then I didn't think it was ever going to bounce back from that. I was like, oh, it peaked at 19,000. I don't think it's ever going to go back up again. And then man, was I wrong? We jumped up to 60 and it's back down at 40 right now. But some people think it's gonna be at six figures by the end of the year. I don't know. But if it makes another run like it did a couple months ago, possibly, it's just it's kind of wild to watch it. It's the thing that scares me though about cryptocurrency is just how volatile it is. It's constantly in flux,
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you go into this, I mean, that's what I was saying. For me, I look at it as part of a portfolio strategy, and you look at your risk-adjusted returns, and you're like, okay, on one end you have real estate that is quite stable, on the other end you have cryptocurrencies, and then one is going to be more volatile than the other, and one will have more like potential returns than the other. But also, I mean, what I find fascinating is lots of people, they don't have a good grasp of risks, which is, I mean, it's fine. I mean, if you think you're going to make 250% on in a month on something, just be ready to lose 100%, because that's how it works. There are no investments that only go in one direction. So as long as you're ready to lose a lot of money, you can't expect to gain a lot of money. So that's a whole thing. I mean, and then, I mean, for me, the price of Bitcoin as well, this past year, it's also because there is a lot of money in the system at the moment, is that the money printing machine is working a full regime. So it's going into all the asset classes, they're all going through the roof, which is, real estate, like equity, everything is going through the roof. So venture capital, there is just
Absolutely.
so much money to invest, and like money needs to find a place. That's why the institutional investors are like, where do we go? Oh, let's go into crypto, because they need to find a place, they need to find yield, they need to find returns. So that's what it also is propping the whole thing.
And the people that are, that are pumping it up and and making it jump the way it is. It's not like they're putting, you know, all of their eggs in one basket and putting it all in there. I mean, there probably are some people I know, you know, you read a lot of articles back when the whole GameStop thing happened and then Dogecoin, like people taking their life savings and dumping it into it. But unfortunately they started a little later in the game and they wound up losing it all. So, you know, you have to be prepared with any investment, that, you know, it's a risk, right? So you have to be prepared that any money that you're going to put into anything can possibly be lost, right? So it's important that whatever it is you decide to go into, that you do your own due diligence, right? And make sure that it's something that you're comfortable putting your money into. And if it's, you know, something like it's a speculation and you're not entirely sure the, you know, which way it's going to go, and you haven't really done enough research, then don't risk it all. You know, don't go put everything in there and put all your eggs in one basket. Cause if you drop that basket and they all crack, you're not going to have any eggs left, you know? So, okay. So I want to know, like, what over the past couple of weeks or months has really caught your attention with what's going on in fintech today?
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about the podcast editing service that we use for the Average Joe Finances podcast. That is editpods.com. And what I really like about them is it's a subscription-based service, so the prices are fantastic. And not only do they do the podcast episodes for us, but they also make us videos, audiograms, social media caption videos. They do our show notes, thumbnails. It's just fantastic products. Go check them out at editpods.com.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about Wealth Tender. If you are a finance content creator, whether that's a blog, a podcast, you're a financial advisor or a financial coach, I highly recommend you check out Wealth Tender. Wealth Tender is building a database of all the top finance blogs, podcasts, and the financial advisors and financial coaches that they have on there are vetted and top-notch. So we actually had the pleasure of hosting Brian Thorpe, the CEO and founder of Wealth Tender, on Average Joe Finance's podcast, episode 25. Go check out that episode, listen to his story, and listen to him talk about the database that he's building. It's really phenomenal stuff. So if you're interested in checking out the directory, or if you're a finance content creator and you're interested in joining up with the directory, go to the link below in the show notes or check out www.averagejoefinances.com/wealthtender.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Well, obviously, I mean, the situation in crypto, I think regulation is coming anyway, because which is probably going to be good. Because lots of people didn't know that they had to pay taxes. Oh, no, the IRS is coming for me. Yes, the IRS is always coming for you,
man. Always.
So it's quite interesting. We'll see where this goes. But it's obvious. I think it's good for the whole industry. We see, you know, Klarna raising a lot of money. Tells you a bit of story around consumer finance and how it's changing, because buy now, pay later is emerging as something very strong, as an alternative to credit cards and personal loans. It's quite an interesting trend, I think. I look a lot at consumer finance, I mean, in the US and in Europe, and you can see that there is an underlying trend with buy now, pay later, and people like it. They like it's part of this old thing I was talking about, like embedded finance, which is you buy something at checkout, it tells you, oh, you can pay in 3 times, 5 times. Okay, fine. And it's a nice customer experience. The interest rate is sometimes it's zero, because most of the time the merchant is financing, so that's why it's zero. So you pay like 10 times, like, and it doesn't cost you anything. It's because actually someone is paying. It's not like it's not 10 times and, oh, who is making money? Well, Klarna is making money. It's the merchant is paying. So sometimes you pay, sometimes the other pay, but it's an interesting, I think, business model. And it has its pros and cons. I think there are also the argument that people get more into that with that, that they don't see. They don't see it's, oh no, it's not, it's not, it's not credit. I'm just paying 10 times. Like, yeah, it's credit because it ties you over a period of time. If you miss a payment, then it's the same. I mean, I don't know how in the US, but in the UK, they're starting to say, well, it should have the same impact as missing a payment on a loan. So, so there, there's going to be like some reckoning with some changes around
so,
there.
So if some impact to your credit score.
So, but it's an interesting trend for sure. I mean, I look at it and I find it interesting. And the last one, I guess, it's not, you were saying about GameStop, the whole Robinhood democratizing trading. They say it's democratized investing. For me, what they try to incentivize is trading. So in, like, what they want you is to trade five times a day, like buy some weird options. It's not what you, I mean, if you're investing, that's not what you're supposed to do. This is day trading. 80% of the people are going to lose money, if not, not 90%. So I think it, it's obviously, I think what they're doing, I understand, but I'm also quite careful about what kind of customer behavior they try to push for here.
Yeah. So I want to go back to what we were talking about with, you know, that, that point of sale, payments now, right. With it being, you said it was with Karna, right? When you say somebody pays 10 times, are you talking about like when they go and they check out and they get their products that they have the option, or is it even an option, or is it automatic that they go and get the products and it's okay, you have to make 10 payments now, you know, over the next 10 months? Or you said sometimes that people would get it for free, like it's already paid for, just it depends on how it is when you get up there. Like, I'm not entirely sure. Like, how does that work? Like, are some people going to wind up overpaying for products while other people get it for free?
No, no. What I meant by that, sorry, is that sometimes at checkout, they tell you, oh, you can pay. Let's say you're buying something for, you're buying a computer for $2,000. You can pay $10,000 now, or you can pay 10 times $200 over the next 10 months. So this is what, you know, this is the buy now, pay later plan.
Okay. Okay.
And what I meant by that is that sometimes it would say, oh, look, if you pay in 10 times, it's going to be $2,200 because this is interest on the loan. But sometimes they just tell you, look, it's $2,000 if you pay now, or it's $2,000, like, you know, divided by 10, no cost for you.
Oh, so with zero interest. When
yeah. Yeah, when this is your interest, no cost. What I meant is that someone is paying, is that Klarna is not doing it for free, or whoever is, like, nothing is free in this world. So
yeah, so do they get paid by transaction fee, or like similar to like a point of sale with a credit card? Or is it like, do they get paid per payment? Like if you had that like over a 10 month period, are they getting paid like per transaction or per payment? How does that work?
So, I mean, what I've seen before, so I've looked at developing products in that space, is there are various options, but typically it's the merchant who's paying the interest rate. So the e-commerce website or whatever, they're going to pay the 19% APR or 5% APR, whatever, like the interest rate on the loan. It will be the one that fit the bill.
Okay.
And so that's, but it can be just a fixed fee as well. It can be different, but usually, yeah, what I meant is that someone is paying. The website is usually paying.
Yeah, for sure. So it's the actual vendor who's going to be paying that cost in that particular situation if you're getting it for like 0%. So
yeah.
Okay, right on. Yeah, this is definitely some interesting stuff. It's not stuff that I talk about every day or have guests on to talk about this stuff every day. So it's definitely interesting to learn. You know what I'm learning today. So now out of all of these things that you're looking at that kind of get you excited, what would you say is probably the most exciting thing? Is it crypto or is it this new point of sale system? What is it that's exciting you the most right now?
So what is exciting me at the moment is the whole wealth management space. So I'm working on a little project of mine, like a new company. in that space. Because what I was saying is that I think it's great. There are lots of investing options that have been out there. You know, you can invest in so many asset classes these days. This was not possible before. Before, you couldn't invest in venture capital, like in startups. Now you have crowdfunding. You have ETFs in absolutely everything. You know, I made some investment last year in oil, and because you can play oil fluctuations now. It's like, it's amazing what you can do now in terms of the asset classes you can invest into. However, what I'm not seeing yet is a tool to help you actually plan where you should invest and like help you in the decisions you're making, rather than telling people, oh, you know, you should trade options and buy like exotic options on GameStop. I'm like, yeah, no, but this is not an investment strategy. What I was saying, how, you know, like a tool to help you, like you should diversify, you should do all of these, and you should have money in that asset class, you should have this. So this is quite, I think, a field that I don't see a lot of things happening. I see a few things, but I don't see, like, you know, your Robin Hood of financial planning. You're like someone tackling this and saying, I'm going to help you guys. I'm going to help you manage your wealth, because you can do it if you have, you know, if you have $50 million, of course, you're going to have like wealth managers all over you and they're going to do this for you. But what happens if you have a bit of money? And everybody can plan. Everybody can do financial planning. It's a whole thing where you think you need money to plan your money. No, you can invest $100 a month and build your wealth over time. And you can invest $100,000. It's fine. You just put this whole plan for your future. And this is what, you know, gets me excited at the moment.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, like, you know, you don't see a lot of like stuff that's out there for do it yourself planning, right? You know, so unless you're going out there and hiring a financial advisor, you know, there's not really a lot of options for you to sit there and manage your wealth yourself with having some type of like guidance that'll help you. I mean, you know, there's robo advisors and things like that, but it's not the same as you really doing it yourself, right? And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, take pride in being able to do things themselves. You know, like I have a portfolio that's just, you know, some play money that I, you know, mess around with. And I'm excited because it's averaging 30% for the year. So that's something I did myself. It was, you know, the research I did and things like that. There's kind of like that self-gratification. You're like, oh, I did this. You know, I didn't have to hire somebody to say, yeah, I do have a financial advisor that manages other accounts, right? But this was just something for me to see if I can do it. And it's funny because I started this whole thing as a speculation account, and it wound up turning into me investing into safer bets, like things that I knew I liked, like different dividend paying assets, like real estate investment trusts and things like that. So yeah, that's definitely something that excites me too. When I get to, you know, get in there and do some stuff myself, it's definitely exciting. So is there any particular things that you're looking at that's upcoming in the future? Or are you trying to develop some type of software in the future, or work with some companies to make something like that in the future that's going to be more of a do-it-yourself to manage your own wealth?
Yeah, so we're actually building something. So we're building a company around that, with not doing it myself, with a lot of smarter people than me, like, you know, artificial intelligence and economics, just to build something quite solid. But yeah, I think there is a space around people that, you know, they want to do it themselves. You know, you were saying robot advisors, it's cool, but you give the keys and you're like, okay, you know, do it for me.
Exactly.
And for me, for instance, I'm lucky. I like to peek and to make mistakes, to make good bets. And that's the beauty of it. And I don't want to give the keys to someone and do it for me. I want to do it myself. But there are no I don't see any tools, like, especially if you want cross. I mean, you can see, like, you connect to your account, you see, like, listed assets, for instance. You will see all your funds or whatever. What if I want to know as well, like, take into account the equity I have in my house, some real estate investments, some bets I've made on private startups, so this whole thing. So yeah, we're still early stage. We're a stealth mode startup, so we're not disclosing so much about it because the technology is, like, it's quite innovative, and we don't want everybody to steal it. So we're still at this stage,
Yeah,
but
right on.
we're starting to look at investors to take it to the next level. But yeah, no, it's quite exciting. It
Awesome.
will make a splash at some point.
Yeah, right on. Are you gonna do like a Kickstarter campaign, or are you gonna strictly just reach out to some investors and see what you guys can come up with?
Yeah, for now we're going to look for angel investors
Okay.
and VC funds at pre-seed. But I do like the idea of crowdfunding, especially when you buy a retail when you build a retail product. I think it's a good way to bring your early like adopters
Yeah.
on, and they have skin in the game. Like, early investors in some great startups, then they become the best advocates of your products. They're like, yeah, but because I invest in this company, I have so much money in it now, so I'm
Yeah.
using their product. So I
And
do
they
I do
become
like the
your beta
concept.
testing group too, you know? So, yeah, hey,
Yeah,
cool. I mean, you
definitely.
know, if whichever route you go, the whole thing's pretty exciting, especially when you're building something that could be so massive, right? So, I really wish you luck with that. I really hope that you guys build something really awesome that's gonna, you know, be able to combine all the things that we talked about today. That'd be really fun. So, hey, so I just want to ask you a little bit more about what you yourself are doing, right? So, for you, Tristan, like, what other asset classes or what asset classes in general do you personally invest in yourself?
Yeah, so I'm quite diversified. So I put my money where my mouth is. So over the years, what I've done is that I try to build a portfolio that is quite balanced. And the way I look at investments, I look at time horizon. So the things that I don't need, the things that I'm investing for 20, 30 years, it's gonna go real estate, equity, and I'm like, okay, this is for the long term. And real estate, because it's stable and it kind of goes up slightly a bit, and equity because it can fluctuate. So I'm like, I don't mind if it dives, and we'll see how it goes. So yeah, so I've invested in real estate. I've invested like real one, not through like funds, but I bought real estate. I invest into equity, and equity I'm also trying to diversify a bit of Asia, a bit of US, a bit of Europe. And I try the way I look at it, so I'm looking at ETFs and stuff like S&P 500, FTSE 100, and I'm trying to match the global economies and look at the way they're growing. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing like a macro play. I'm like, okay, like the US is that big right now, and it's growing that much, so I'm putting this. And then I look at China, and so that's how I invest in equity. And then I've also diversified in other stuff, so investing a bit in startups through crowdfunding. It's a good tool. You can make lots of bets without having to go like 5,000, 10,000 into like a private company. You can say, I'll put to 50, 500 or whatever. And yeah, I have a bit of crypto. And so, and like you, sometimes I take opportunistic approaches. Is that I last year I bought some oil, when it went to negative territory. Or actually, I bought like around $20, and I was like, it's not, it can't. I was looking at it, so I was like, look, it can't stay that like this because everybody's losing money. So I bought in. And it went up. I made a good amount, and I did the same trade in 2016. So I also like to have a bit of money to play around. But yeah, I literally try to diversify as much as possible. I'm careful about the allocation. So I will rebalance if I see I'm too much on something, that it's evolving too much. And I try to rebalance and diversify. This is my investment strategy.
Yeah, that's great. You're probably one of the more well-diversified people that I've talked to on the show when you're talking about all the different areas you're investing in. That's awesome. And the fact that you stay on top of it, that if you see you're kind of, if the powers that be are starting to have an imbalance, you adjust and you rebalance your portfolio. So that's right on, man. You're sounds like you're very disciplined with where you keep your portfolio at. So that's definitely awesome. All right. So a lot of the folks that listen to my show are, they're just starting out. They just got themselves out of debt. They want to start investing. Do you have any tips or tricks that you would recommend for somebody who's just getting ready to get out there and get started today?
Yeah. I mean, what I was saying is that these days you have lots of cheap options to invest. I would look at the horizon. As I sense, do you need the money in the next year, next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? And try to see, like, because some asset classes are more or less liquid. So you buy a house, or some assets are less liquid, and some are more, you need to take a very long-term view. So I would look at this. So when do you need it's as simple as, when do you need the cash? Do you need the cash in the next year or not? So if you have built as well your kind of emergency fund, and then you go and invest, if it's money that you don't need right now and it's for retirement, buy like a S&P 500 ETF and start like this. And it's your play on the US economy, and it's going to fluctuate a bit, but it's a good long-term bet. So I would start like this first, and then slowly you start building up and diversifying to have exposure to other stuff like emerging countries and so on. And then if you can, start buying like a bit of real estate, you can also do it through real estate trusts. And you can invest. The thing is, for instance, crowdfunding should be like around 5% of your portfolio with venture capital, right? So at that point, when your portfolio is big enough, you can start diversifying in other asset classes, a bit of crypto here and there if you want, to spice your portfolio. But the basics for me are, for the long term, the basic is equity, and it can take different forms. But I would say like going to like funds or ETFs, because if you're just getting started doing like a bit of stock picking, like the risks are a bit higher. If you want to build a portfolio of like stocks, how will you know? That's why S&P 500 is great. 500 companies, a bit in everything. Well, obviously tech have a strong like weight, but it's a good diversification play at first. Is that you put $100 in S&P 500, you're diversified already.
Right on. Yeah, that's all fantastic advice. Really awesome, man. This has been a fun conversation, because I learned a little bit more. I guess it's okay to be wary of cryptocurrencies and things that you don't know too much about, but at the same time, not be 100% afraid of getting involved in it, right? Because, like we were talking about earlier, every investment carries with it some type of risk, right? But if you don't take any risk at all, then you don't reap any rewards. So I'm not telling everybody to go out and go buy a bunch of cryptocurrencies or anything like that. Just do your research and make sure that it's something that you want to add to your portfolio. I think one of the things that Tristan really pointed out a lot is the diversification of where you're, allocating your assets, right? It's important to have such a strong diversification. And Tristan, I was very surprised at the fact that you also invest in real estate, because when I looked at your background and I looked at what we were going to talk about today, I was like, all right, man, he's going to come on here and be like, I'm 80% crypto or 100% crypto. So I'm really excited to know that you're so well diversified, not only in like specific, you know, asset classes, right? You're in all of them. You've got real estate, you've got paper assets, but you're also looking at the different economies of different countries when you take into consideration what you're going to get yourself involved in. And that's really exciting. I don't really invest outside of the United States. So it's kind of, looking at it from that point of view was kind of eye-opening for me. You're definitely taking a more holistic approach. And like you said, at a much higher level, right? You're sitting here at the 100,000 foot level, looking down at Earth and saying, okay, US is doing this right here. It's going up. China's doing this. Okay. I'm going to get a little here, a little there. I mean, that's some true diversification right there, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest also is that you don't need millions as well to diversify, is that, so for instance, I mean, when I say, I bought real estate in Marseille in south of France, because I was living in London. London is quite an expensive city. And I was like, well, okay, you know what? The market is a bit too expensive here, but I want to buy real estate to diversify. So I bought in Marseille, like, you know, a fraction of what I would have bought in London. Diversifying doesn't mean you need a lot of money to have money everywhere. It's actually, these days, it's quite cheap to have money a bit everywhere. So yeah, buying real estate, maybe it's not exactly where you are. You find a city that is mid-sized, a bit cheaper, and you buy there. And this is how you start investing. So there are various ways to do that. I think a lot of people just think you need a lot of money to plan your wealth and to invest and stuff. And I think that's just not true.
Not at all. You can get started with $100, right? You know what's exciting is I bring a lot of people on the show that are real estate investors, and it's a very common thing that people invest out of state. Like, you know, so I live in Hawaii, so it's really expensive to buy more property out here in Hawaii. So I, like many others that live here in Hawaii, we invest out of state, right? But you know, you're not only with where you're at right now, you're investing out of country, right? Which is really awesome. And you're not afraid to get yourself out there. And I mean, this has just been really cool, man. I think, when we talk about fintech and just, you know, where finance is heading to in the future, it's just very exciting. Like, there's a very bright future for the different things that are coming out right now that we as investors and just individuals that want to retire in the future need to be mindful of, right? That whole thing that you were talking about, that technology with the point of sale technology, is really awesome. I don't think we even have that live anywhere in the United States yet. So I'll keep an eye out for when, there's stores or companies that will allow for transactions like that. Maybe you can do it online if you're buying in another country, but I don't think there's any US vendors doing that right now. So that's pretty exciting, just things that are, to come in the future.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you will have noticed, I'm quite excited about everything that is coming up. I think the past 10 years has been amazing, but there's a lot more to do.
The next 10 years will be even better.
Yeah, and there's no way to stop it. And it will be interesting to see also the overall dynamics in terms of the companies that stay around, because a lot of money is going into startups and not all of them are going to survive. What about the big banks? Are they all going to survive? I don't know. But so it's going to be an interesting dynamic in terms of the actual businesses that win, because you can't have so many. If you look at business strategy, you can't have so many companies like after the same market. Over the long run, only a few survive, and then smaller players obviously. But you can't have only massive companies that go after just the same client. If you look at Google, Amazon, like they're good examples of they go after a market. You have also other competitors, then ultimately only, you know, Highlander, only one wins at the end, only one survives.
I like the reference. As long as Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and all them don't try to like behead each other, I think we'll be okay. Awesome, man. Hey, this was a exciting conversation. Again, I learned a lot. I took a lot of notes down. I really appreciate you taking some time to talk with me. I know it's about 9 o'clock in the morning there. It's 9 o'clock at night here. So as I'm getting ready to wind down and end my day, you're just getting started. But I definitely appreciate you, taking this time to talk with me today, Tristan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. It was a great chat.
And I forgot, there is one more thing, because I can't sign off without this. This is the most important thing I got to ask you, right? Because with all the stuff that we talked about today, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people in my audience that are going to be very interested in what it is that you're doing, especially when we talked about the FinTech review, right? So where can people find out more about that? Some more information on you. Do you have a website you could share with us and social media? We definitely can't leave without getting this information.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, to be honest, I'm on all over. I'm all over. So you can find me on Twitter, FinTech underscore review. You can find me on Instagram, FinTech review, and find me on Facebook, FinTech review.net. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can follow me, connect with me. I just enjoy talking to people. And so basically just get in touch. You can also go on fintechreview.net, drop me an email at hello@fintechreview.net. So just get in touch.
Awesome. All right. So I'll make sure I have all of that in the show notes for everybody. So if you didn't just listen to that and write it down, you can certainly go into the show notes, copy and paste it, and go check out Tristan and everything that he's doing. I think some of the stuff that we talked about today is just kind of tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that you can get, and you can get that information by checking out his website. So make sure you get out there and check it out. Follow him on social media. Definitely putting out some good info. I enjoyed the flow of this conversation. I definitely think you're going to be moving on into the future as you do more of these reviews and more interviews with these companies. It's going to be really exciting to follow what you're doing. So again, hey, thanks, man, so much for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It was really great.
All right, aloha.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decision.